Hey, thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our newsletter at theproductporch.com for notifications on the latest episodes and exclusive content. Why don't you call your support line?
Your own
find out if they can help you
support
with
support line?
Your support line. Find out if they can help you with your product. That would teach you a lot about, oh shoot, I need to train.
I love that.
Welcome to the Product Porch with Ryan Cantwell, Joe Galley, and me, Todd Blockier. Today, Ryan, Joe, and I explore the importance of good customer experiences and how to use them to level up your product management game. Now settle in, folks, because on the Product Porch, every topic is a product topic. You would look great with an earring. I think you could look great with an earring and a soul patch and little square glasses, little square sunglasses.
There you go, so I can look like a hippie or something like that.
Oh, man, that'd be perfect.
So, guys, I've had something on my mind for a while now. It has seemed to me like the state of client experience and customer support is declining. And I've noticed this in regular brick and mortar stores that I've gone into. I've seen this when I've had to make calls for services to our home or even at work in dealing with B2B SaaS support. I'm going to share one experience that I've seen recently. So I had to return an Amazon package. I take it back to the UPS store. I walk in and here's the state. There's a counter. If you can picture this, two people behind the counter. One of them is actively helping a customer. And then there's another customer in the store who is kind of standing in this space awkwardly. I don't know if they're in line or not. So I walk slowly up to this person, look at them. They don't seem to be waiting to be helped. And so I look at the guy behind the counter who's doing nothing. Decide, okay, I'll go up to the counter, see what's happening. I walk up to the counter and he puts his hand up. So I hand him the box. He takes it. He does some magic behind the counter, beep, beep, with some scanner thing, type. A little receipt thing comes out, a little sticker. He hands it to me. I take it. I have no idea what's happening. They don't know if there's more to this transaction. So I just stand there. And we stared at each other for a good 5 to 10 seconds, just awkwardly stared at each other until finally, I guess he had enough. And he said, we're done.
That sounds amazing. You're going to be a lifelong customer of that UPS store, right? Or you're going to promote it on social media?
Oh my gosh. I've never felt so warm inside in a customer experience than when he said, we're done.
Right. Thanks, Kyle. I'm calling him Kyle. That was Kyle.
I think my good buddy Kyle here is just representative of the current state of customer experience and client support right now. I want to know, have you two noticed the same decline? Is this just my experience or are you experiencing the same thing?
I think it's in pockets. So let me give you a different story. A couple of years ago, we were flying to Disney. It's a Thursday night. We're taking a late flight out of Milwaukee and there's a snowstorm and we're trying to get out. And unfortunately, we got delayed. We're sitting on the runway. A neighbor of ours texts us and says, they closed Mitchell Airport. This is the Milwaukee airport. I call the 1-800 number for Southwest because I know that I can get a live agent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And sure enough, I talked to Mandy and I'm still on the plane. And Mandy booked me on the next flight out of Midway that next morning. I think it still exists for those companies who understand that really good customer service can be a differentiator. I think there are pockets of it, but I believe that there are certain companies who are willing to see a decline in their customer experience scores at the sake of saving costs.
I'm going to say I've had both experiences, right? Todd, I see a similar trend downward. And I think when you have good experiences, it's because the person, the individual, wants to give you one, not because their company is expecting them to.
That's an interesting take. I didn't get to respond to what Joe said because I felt like I set the ball and then Joe turned around and smacked it right back in my face.
I said there are pockets. You're so sensitive.
Two sides of the coin here. That's okay. I have data to back me up. I'm going to share that data in a second.
All right. You
Ryan, sure like I love what I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I was just it feels to me like there is an active push and it seems financially motivated to try to limit as much interaction with the human as possible. Like
automate it.
It is this like active resistance to just not be helpful.
Not be helpful. Yeah, I said I had data. Let me share some data and then let's dive into this.
Yes.
Because I love what you said, Joe. Honestly, I do love what you said. We'll need to dig into that as well. Like there's a differentiation opportunity, right?
Yep.
And honestly, you get a greater differentiation opportunity as the rest of the market moves away from customer service.
Totally.
This is what, there was a Forrester article that came out, a Forrester study, Customer Experience Index is what it's called, that came out a year ago. And in this, they revealed that U.S. customer experience quality has hit its lowest point ever. It dropped for the third year in a row to a 69.3. So at least that data tells me, hey, I'm not the only one. People are feeling it.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you guys remember all the hoo-ha with Klarna? You guys know Klarna. It's like a pay now, buy now, pay later.
Buy now, pay later.
And they made the news like in 2022 about how they're cutting like 700 roles to replace them all with chatbots. Like mm-hmm. That's basically the idea, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there was all this uproar, but this is, you know, at the height of, you know, AI and what's AI going to do, and it's going to replace humans and all this uproar. I don't think they got much press when it was announced that they were rehiring humans. And the CEO publicly acknowledged the drop in quality and admitted that they went too far. To go back to what you're saying, I think it's going to come back because people are going to revolt. Customers are going to react. They're going to go elsewhere, and companies are going to feel that very quickly.
So, Joe, are you saying it's a pendulum swing and we're now one way?
I do think it's a pendulum swing. I do.
Joe, you had a story at the top about your experience with Southwest. I think this is what's funny too, is when we have a good experience, we feel so good about it. But the thing is, they shouldn't be that rare. It's like we found a unicorn. Oh my gosh, look at this. Somebody actually treated me well and helped me out. What an amazing thing.
Yeah.
But think of even the loyalty that builds, even in those small moments. And as a product person, how valuable is that? Like if you can start to build that loyalty, I mean, we were taught in business school, it's easier to get a customer to come back than it is to recruit somebody new.
Easier to retain a customer or less expensive to retain a customer than it is to acquire a new one.
Acquire a new one, exactly. Yeah. So it can really become like a differentiator. It's a thing that adds value.
Well, okay. So you said differentiator. So this made me think of my own company, CNA. So there's a part of our business that sells something called surety bonds. Basically, if there is like work being done to a school or a municipality, the construction company has to buy bonds. It's like it validates that they're going to do their work, right? If they don't do the work, then there's recourse. So you have to be, like when they talk about, you have to be bonded, right? To do work. And CNA has this part of the business that is very successful, but it's a commodity product, right? They sell like in specific denominations, but they're known as the market leader, not because you can buy a $100 bond for less than $100. That's not the case. The reality is there's a call center in Sioux Falls, North Dakota. So if you have a question, you're going to talk to a live person. So they're still making that investment in the technology. You know, they want to automate as much of it as they can. But the way that they differentiate themselves for a commodity product like bonds, it's their customer service, where a lot of our competitors have foregone that because they want to try to save a little bit on the bottom line. But loyalty, right? The same customers keep coming back and back to us because if they have questions, they know they're going to talk to a live person in Sioux Falls. And a lot of the people that they talk to in Sioux Falls have been there for 30 years, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Right? Joe, like I have to tell you, Sioux Falls is in South Dakota, not North Dakota.
I'm sorry, did I say North Dakota? South Dakota. I don't know my geography. So let's make sure we fix that on the cut.
Yeah, and I want to think about it too this way. As a product person, these interactions can be a treasure trove. And instead of trying to just shove people away from you to move them through the system, you can even look at it as a way to collect some insights. So why are we so quick to dismiss these people? Now, I'm sure there's those out there saying like, well, if you digitize it and automate it, you can measure every step of the journey. And all
that's true.
That is true. Yes. But it's like every interaction is almost a real qualitative experiment that's being run on the value that somebody's getting. And you're validating if they value that or not. Like,
so I want to throw out some tips here, kind of end to end. Because if you're early product manager, you know, you're in your first 5 years of your career, this could be really hard because you're managing your backlog and you're like, I actually don't think we have a good customer service experience here. I don't think we have a good reputation, but there's nothing much I can do about that. I look at my NPS rating at our company level. It's not great. We have low customer satisfaction scores. I don't know what I can do.
Yeah.
One thing is to remember as a product manager, you actually own the whole product. You understand that how that product is sold is part of your responsibility.
Yeah.
How that product is onboarded, implemented, trained on, supported, that is a huge part of your job. So as a product manager, where you can help a lot, those are each points where a customer is touching your company in relation to your product. Now, one of the reasons someone might have a bad experience with customer support, or I should just say client experience at large. They may feel like they have a bad experience with a salesperson because a salesperson doesn't understand something or misrepresented or didn't explain something right. Well, if you do a better job of capturing the right key messages and training your sales team and making sure they understand so that they have the right documentation and the content to be able to support those needs, then you can be more confident that your customer is not being sold a false bill of goods. They're hearing the right thing, right? Or, hey, let's think about when you're implementing an onboarding. If you've done a good job of enabling your onboarding team to understand this product, how it works, created trainings, whatever that means, created the right content. If your onboarding team feels confident about how that product works and how to train on that, they're going to do better. They're going to do a better job. They're going to come across as more understanding. They're going to come across as better equipped, right? That's about you. What does that look like when we onboard? And then finally with support. You know, when support's really bad is when they don't know what to do. When they don't know how to answer the question, they don't have the tools. But if you're there to provide them with the right answers to the FAQs and the right way of doing things, and you're ready to support them and respond to those needs as they come alive, that's how you can start driving some good customer experience. Now, I have like a few other ideas. I was going to say like 40 other ideas. I don't know, I have 40. I have a few other ideas. But maybe we at least could stop there with that thought. What do you guys think? Am I off base? It's realistic, not realistic. What is your feeling on that?
I think I agree with everything you've said. I just maybe want to add to it a little bit, Todd. That's going to be my approach here. Because you're owning the whole product as a product manager, you do have some responsibility to make sure not only they have the right information to be successful and confident and do what they need to do, but even on an ongoing basis, it's like continuous discovery. Like, we need to shadow. We need to spend time with them. We need to understand how escalations are happening and people aren't getting caught in death loops of getting nowhere. And because sometimes there's no metric for that. You just need to experience it, right? You need to see how it's happening. And I think that's really important for product people to keep in mind, whether it's a sales experience, a support experience, a purchasing experience. It could be a number of things, but looking at those from the perspective, I'm going to use the E word. Are you ready? Empathy. Just empathize with them. How it works. And then you can improve that experience and make it better.
I like what you said, though. It does start with the individual, the product manager. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know them? Do you want to empathize with them? Do you want this human on the other side to have a good experience? Because if you don't,
right,
then you're just hoping other people do. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I mean, this actually makes me think about a previous podcast where we talked about how AI is helping product managers. AI tools should free up more of our time as product managers so that we can do more discovery. That is one of the benefits of leveraging ChatGPT, Copilot, Microsoft 365. That is one of the primary benefits for a product manager to leverage those tools, because you can get through the tasks that are laborious, and it frees up more of your time to do the ride-alongs, to do the shadows. And it should also allow you to summarize, get the themes. I mean, you can go through phone calls quicker. You can go through emails and surveys quicker. Like, you can get to ideation and experimentation a lot faster by leveraging those tools. So that's like, product managers always complain that they don't have time to do this, or that the companies don't want to take the time because they're expected to churn out as many features as possible. And that's how they're judged. And I'm like, guys, like, you should take advantage of the extra free time that you're acquiring through using these new tools so that you can be closer to your customers, so that you can, in fact, have a strong empathy, so that you are delivering value to them.
Well, and I want to, you said the two magic letters, A and I, Joe, and it's happening now where companies, they're still going to want to try to automate things.
Sure,
of course. AI is going to be used in the customer support context. It already is. I mean, yep. Chatbots being like the big thing, phone systems, AI is everything. But think about the value a product manager could bring to those conversations if they could start from a better place if they were able to empathize with the customer and help the AI understand how to empathize with them too. AI has the capacity to do that. And it'd be better than Kyle. Todd could have walked up to a bot and had a better experience than Kyle.
And let's make sure we don't, all of our listeners, you know, if your name is Kyle, you know, we're not dissing the Kyles of the world. We just, you know, this was the name we came up with. So we love all the Kyles out there that are our listeners, just to make sure we call that out.
That's right. I did come across a statistic too, guys. I think this is just worth mentioning because as we try to prove the business case for what we're advocating for here, Bain and Company found in a study of theirs that customer retention, which, guess what, it's highly driven by good experiences, can boost profits 25 to 95%. Who wouldn't want that, right?
It's a super wide range. but you know what? There's a lot of studies that show that, you know, firms with a higher NPS score, a net promoter score, grow 2x faster.
I do want to ask you guys this too. Is NPS the only thing you can track to know that your customers are satisfied?
Go ahead, Joe. No, I was going to say, I mean, you look at your Google reviews, you look at referrals, repeat business. I mean, I think there's a lot of metrics you can look at to gauge customer happiness.
It's good to have a customer satisfaction survey that you just send out regularly.
Yeah.
Do you have some other ideas, Ryan?
Todd, I heard this from you and I still use it today, but tracking user behavior would be like walking up to a CFO and say, can you track revenue? There's so many different ways to do it. You can do it. The thing is, you got to know what you're measuring. You can't just say NPS might be the be all end all. There might be other things you can look at, maybe more granular behaviors that are happening in your particular product. Or like Joe said, I think repeat business could be a good one. Are people coming back for another transaction, or are they using something in a particular way? I think are great ways to know that you're providing value.
Your support tickets is a great leading indicator.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
If you measure your support ticket frequency, that's something we like to look at with our, you know, our top clients.
Yep.
And we can get a sense if, oh, this might be going the wrong way if we see a sudden increase in support tickets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have a litmus test. And I want to see, you guys can help me build this, but what I want to build this litmus test of questions you can ask yourself right now. So if you're thinking, am I doing the things that are going to lead our company to great customer experience?
Yeah.
Some questions you can ask yourself. Well, the first one, just when was the last time you spoke to a customer?
That's a pretty good litmus test.
you don't ever speak to customers. You're just hoping that people will be customer obsessed, right? Mm-hmm. Another one is, how about this? When was the last time you met with a customer success manager or support rep to hear frontline stories?
Ah, I like that.
Do you know them? Do you meet with them regularly? I'm very proud of our product managers at BetterX who meet with our customer experience team twice a week.
Yeah.
They're very, very well aligned. But yeah, if you're not talking to your customer success experience and you're not talking to your support teams, you already know there's a gap there. Okay, I got three questions in. Are there any others you thought of as I was saying that?
Yes. How often are you updating your personas? Because that to me is an indicator that you're talking to your customers.
Well, so just be careful, Joe. You can't just go update it to say you updated it. You got to do the work first, right?
Correct. But I mean, that was always one of my indicators, because I would ask why. Why are we changing it? What drove you? So there's always like questions. It's like you have to look under the cover. Mm-hmm. But I want to know the why behind it. But those are one of the things that I would look like. Because if you're not updating it, like I've worked at companies where they update their personas every 3 years, where it just becomes a new project whenever there's a new chief marketing officer or chief UX officer that comes in. So one of my litmus test questions is, how often are you updating your personas? Because that usually tells me somebody's talking to a customer and they're getting better insights. And I mean, this one could be a little loose, but how often are you updating your roadmap? Again, tied to you're delivering value, you're getting feedback, you're listening to that feedback. As a result, you're updating your roadmap. I know I may be in seashells and balloons like La La Land, but when I've worked with other organizations, those are little tidbits of information I give to leaders to say, hey, when you're in a one-on-one with your product manager, don't just ask, can you see an updated roadmap? Tell me how you got to this. What drove that? Like, those are always some of my like questions on like, is my product manager doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, and I think those are deliverables and artifacts that are kind of the lagging result of some of that experience. But you can go up from that and just ask, like, could you tell me the three biggest problems your customer is having with your product right now?
Yeah.
I mean, could you do that? You know, could you sell the product as well as your sales team can? Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you listen to your sales team talk about the product. First off, you might hear some things that are wrong. And if so, then the question for yourself is, when was the last time I taught my sales team how to talk about the product? But do you know the key messages? These are great questions to ask. Do you know the value proposition of your product? Can you tell me how this is going to benefit the customer? Though one of the things that you talked about pressure testing, that's something I do with my team all the time. Like when they tell me, hey, Todd, this is the next feature, we're very excited about this. If they don't tell me ahead of time, one of my questions is going to be, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Tell me how is it making their life better? And then of course, because product management is connecting customer value to business objectives, then I ask, what is this going to do for our business? So I want to know both of those things.
And I think one question I would add to your set, Todd, is how consistently are escalations handled? Go talk to like two or three frontline people and see if they know the right procedure. One person might handle, if you find one person handles it all by themselves, and then another one just kicks it immediately to their boss, and then it goes to their boss, and then another one does it differently, you've got a problem. Like you've got some figuring out to do. It's going to be telling.
So let's do something else before we get to takeaways. I'd like to do this.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about, I complained a lot about customer experience and bad experiences I had. And Joe did his best to balance it out by talking about all the wonderful experiences he's had with humans. let's talk about a SaaS product, a software product. Hmm. Let's define a good customer experience.
Okay, so I'll give you guys a recent example, because we moved my daughter into her college dorm and she bought a tool, a product called Freemio. So basically it's, you can easily send pictures from your phone to a digital frame, and she wanted it for her dorm room. SaaS product, okay? So when we talk about with a SaaS product, what are the things I'm looking for? I'm looking for fast onboarding. So I'm in her dorm room. We're connecting to her Wi-Fi. Within 5 minutes, she is up and running with her new toy. Yeah. Right?
There we
Those go. Are the things. That's a key indicator or a key characteristic I'm looking for, is a frictionless, easy onboarding
experience. I know what to do.
Yes.
I know how to get started.
Yes.
Right. I know where to pay. I know where to pay, how to pay. Whatever it is I need to do, I know how to do it. And if I don't know how to do it, I know where to find help. It's very easy to find help.
Yes.
That's right. Not only then, when you look for it, you know where to go. Then the help has to actually be helpful.
Yep.
Instead of through menu after menu, or chatbot getting it wrong after chatbot getting it wrong, and then rage clicking zero on your phone until a human actually answers.
Yes.
So I'm in a room. I'm like the electronics person, right? My wife's doing the decorating, you know, all that. Casey's like, well, that image got cropped, or I want to change the order. And so she went to FAQs, and it's like literally the second and third questions in the FAQs were questions she had.
There you go.
Like, yeah. I'm like, I never Take heard of these guys.
This is like, great customer experience. Yes, we haven't had to talk to a human, but this is still good customer experience.
Exactly.
Customer
experience. It's like they crowdsourced it. They knew what my challenges.
You anticipated my questions. You made it easy for me to find the answer to those questions. I can't tell you how many times now there's a certain brand I use. I'm not going to throw them under the bus either. But I have found ChatGPT is better at troubleshooting than any of their website or instruction guides or anything.
Oh, 100%.
It's so good. Yeah.
Well, I take pictures of the screen. I'm like, chat, help me figure out how to do this. It's so much better than the other. I'm serious. Like that is a reality. Like I think customers have a low threshold of patience now when it comes to troubleshooting. If I don't get it resolved within like the first two tries, I will literally take a picture of the screen that I'm on. I will write the prompt on my phone, on my ChatGPT prompt. And I'm like, I will get better service and better answers.
So you know what? I've never tried this, but I wonder if why don't you call your support line? Find out if they can help you with your support line. Find out if they can help you with your product. That would teach you a lot about, I need to train. I need to train my team.
I love that.
When I worked at Generac, one of the first things I did as a product manager is I called one of their reps on, like, how do I know my home's ready for one? What questions? What's the process? Like, just to get an idea, like, they didn't know me. I hadn't started yet, but I wanted to know the types of questions they ask. How do they engage with you? Like that, I mean, as much as we joke about it, it's legit.
It'd be a great way of doing it.
Especially if you have a commercial-facing product. If you have a commercial-facing product.
I will say this. You know, if I was to give myself that litmus test, I think I'd do really well. I tell you what I haven't done. I haven't spent time with support people. That actually makes me want to now shout out some support calls. I haven't done that.
Yeah.
But I have sat down with customer success managers.
Yeah.
And it was refreshing coming to this company and joining some customer success calls and being like, holy cow, we rock. Mm-hmm. Like the way our customer success team just wants so badly to be helpful and they have the right information at their fingertips. And when they don't, they will find it and they will get back immediately. So much so that I realize I have to show up with our customers because I can't be the weak link.
Right.
It can't be like, oh man, their team's awesome. And then I met their VP of product and it was like,
that guy.
This guy. Yeah. I'm like, shoot, I got to be awesome because everyone else at this company is so stellar.
Right.
That was refreshing.
All right. So key takeaways. I got one.
Go, Joe.
Todd, I know we started off on the wrong foot here with this podcast, but the epiphany around the whole product, we forget about that concept. It's so easy to get caught up in the features and the functionality and capabilities. And some of the lowest hanging fruit that we can tackle as product managers is understanding the whole customer experience. That can be a differentiator and it can be a low cost differentiator. You just got to understand the start the customer journey, start to finish. So I just like, I think it's just that reminder of the whole product. Like even now I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. It's so easy to go for the easy, like sexy, shiny new thing and to kind of dismiss like the service and the onboarding and all that. Like it doesn't sound great, but it's got such a big impact on the customer's perception of your organization or your product.
100%. 100%. And I'll add, you know, my takeaway is customer experience doesn't just mean smiles and happy, nice, fluffy feelings. It means having the information when you need it.
Right.
It means being there and being responsive and helping people find where they're trying to go. What is their job to be done?
Yep.
Where do they want to get to? How do they get that information? And as a product manager, you can do that. You don't have to teach your teams how to talk to humans. You don't have to go to them and say, hey, be nice, be friendly. They don't need that.
No.
What they need is, what's the information that's going to enable me to help people when they call?
That's helpful.
Yep.
Right. And that kind of ties into the takeaway I was going to say, in that don't treat your customer service support or even the customer experience of your product as an afterthought or the cleanup crew for your product, because that's not what it is at all.
They're your peers.
It is a front,
it's a front line
driver. This is, if your product were to have a real face, it's that, and you better make sure they're enabled to do it.
100%.
I just realized the three of us haven't gotten together in a while. Like we've had like guest stars and we've been like vacations and like it's been a while since the three of us have hung out. This feels good.
It does feel good.
It's nice to see you all. And I'm glad, Joe, that you're still a monkey. And I'm glad, Ryan, that you're sloth.
Jira slinging ticket monkey, to be exact. All right, gentlemen, it's been real. It's good to see you guys on the porch.
Until next time, fellas.
You too.
Until next time.
Thank you for joining us on the Product Porch. We release new episodes every 2 weeks. You can also find us on LinkedIn for more content. We offer a special thank you to AJ and Jack Block here for the music. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts of this podcast are their own and do not represent nor necessarily reflect those of their employer.